For May the 26th, 2023, we talk about the Street Fighter 6 beta, The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, My House.wad, and much more. Welcome to Level 459. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm David Mysmith.
I'm Jala Prendes.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, Ben.
Hey, thanks for having me back. Thanks for taking me back in.
We'll do it just this once. How was your trip?
Yeah, I got to go back to Cincinnati, family medical stuff, but all is good. I got to see friends and see a lot of babies. So, yeah, it was a fun time.
It's been forever since I've been to Cincinnati.
It's still there.
It was before the pandemic, I think. I think it would have been one of the Christmas things we used to do. Yeah.
The get together. Yeah.
No more. Well, I mean, I could go. In fact, I would benefit from it, but it's good to hear it's still there.
Yeah.
You know, for your people.
We'll have to get a time story to get you back there.
Maybe. Or you could just hang out, you know, it's fine. Yeah. Cool. Well, I'm happy that you're back. Jala, how about you? How are you doing?
I got a replacement AC unit and I installed it yesterday. So I am happy that I am no longer sweltering.
That's amazing. We were talking before we started recording. It is on and I can't hear it.
Yes, it's a much better unit than the last one. So, yeah.
Yeah, and you replaced it because it broke, not because it was making too much noise during recording.
Yeah, we just put up with the noise because money, you know, but like this was like, I have no AC now.
Yeah, no, that's not tenable. You live in Texas. Yeah.
Yeah. So that I just have boring news. That's all.
Hey, new AC is plenty exciting. David, how about you?
I was going to make a, you know, you live in a society joke, but I'm not sure Texas knows it's in a society.
Yeah, they're kind of in a race with Florida. It's really depressing.
Yep. What's wild is that I just today saw that like Florida has had the most population growth since pandemic, which I don't even understand what's going on, but they're all moving to the middle of Florida.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not even the good part of Florida.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, anything happening in Florida is a self-correcting problem considering global warming.
Yeah, and all the limestone down there. It's just a shame because I don't know. I didn't mean to wander us into bummer politics.
Sometimes it's all around and you just walk right into it anyway.
Yeah.
But no, on more optimistic note, this past weekend was Ren Faire.
Ooh.
Did that. And then Monday was World Goth Day. So we had kind of a goth rave thing at a local school. So that was fun.
That's sick.
Yeah. Anything cool at the Ren Faire?
A lot of the standard, lots of crazy clothing being sold and, juggling and musicians and, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Turkey legs, forge exactly. Demonstrations. Yeah. It's sometimes dependability is really good.
Yeah, they had jousting, although I did not get to see it.
I'm surprised for insurance purposes that they're allowed to do that. Those lances must be made out of balsa wood or something.
Probably.
Yeah, I would think just like getting knocked off your horse.
Yeah. Also true. Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure there's like an article or YouTube about how that works because people die. It's like,
oh yeah,
it used to be death by horse misadventure was the primary way people went about 50 years ago.
Oh yeah, equestrianism is the I think the most dangerous mainstream sport.
More so than UFC, like mixed martial arts kind of stuff?
Probably. It's highest risk of traumatic brain injury. Significantly higher, or I don't know, significantly higher than boxing. And MMA has lower traumatic brain injury than boxing because, you know, you're allowed doing things other than punch people in the face.
Yeah. Go ahead.
This totally reframes how I see dressage.
Oh, yeah. I mean, horses are just a massive plot to kill us.
I suppose with horse stuff, it's not about chronic long time risk. It's more you're gambling on a far more severe acute risk.
Yep.
Yeah. Huh.
I mean, some people think they're cute. I think they're kind of funny looking.
About being trampled by horses.
No. That's kind of a fucked up thing for me to say. I apologize.
I think they practice the joustings like professional wrestling, though. I'm sure there's a lot of safety in place, but
yeah.
Yeah, the jousting is not like hardcore or realistic.
Yeah.
In any Ren Faire I've ever been to.
And they've got that little metal circle that hangs over the heart, you know, so that's probably fine. You know,
if you're willing to pay for it, there's somebody who will insure it. So.
Yeah. And for me, I joined the YMCA last week.
YMCA.
I think that somebody tackles you. If you sing that on the premises, to do workouts and stuff. And, barring Sunday, I've been every day since last Monday. Yeah.
Nice, man.
So over a week. So that's good. And on Sunday I went and took a nice walk there's a new nature trail at a wetlands preserve, nearby. So went and walked that and was just, you know, it branches at a couple of points, and the choices that I made led me to a steep hill that went under the highway. There was a bridge. And so I was like, all right, well, I'm going to go. That's obviously a trail. And just it took me over the highway and I walked around a little bit more. It connected to another park. I'm like, well, I'm going to walk back to my car. And I had to cross the highway to get back to my car. So
do you have a goal that you're going for or anything in mind, or
energy and sleep first primarily, and then, you know, probably clothes fit better,
the general activity will just do you a lot of good, especially stuff like walking lowers cortisol levels. I super highly endorse walking, and especially nature trails and stuff like that's even the best.
Yeah. So. I'm also trying stuff out. I have determined that cardio machines can go fucking die.
No one likes cardio machines.
Yeah. And there's a pool right there, and I wake up early enough to go before the classes, but also after all the old people have been there. So I've got the pool for that. Yeah, no, there's really no reason and no particular goal other than, seems like a good thing to do. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That has to be the quickest banter we've ever had. So we probably ought to talk about some video games, I guess.
Comprehensively banted.
Do you need more banter, Cole?
No, it's fine. This is okay. I didn't mean to say that like it was a bad thing. But we've got the regular kind of show for you, what with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with
The Grind,
where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Ben, as the person who has been away the longest, I defer to you.
All right. I got two. I think that's usually normal. One old one, one new one. Mm-hmm. Star Wars Jedi Survivor, I played like a week or a week and a half ago. Mm-hmm. It's still the same game. It's, I don't know, not much changes in it. It feels very similar to the God of War trying to 100% that, where it's like, all right, here's a list of chores. Here's a map. Let's go through it.
Yep. go walk to the icons.
You're really selling this.
Yeah. I'm not so sure it's like having fun as much as like it's like scratching off to-do lists. Like that's the satisfaction of it. And so
it's not having fun. It's murdering time.
Yeah. Anyway. I'm going to move on from that one. The game that I've been playing that's been more interesting is I picked up the Zelda game last week.
Hell yeah.
This was perfectly in time with traveling to Cincinnati since I can take the Switch with me. And it was great to play on the plane. But who has played this so far? So I know my audience.
Cole. I have.
Okay.
Talked about first impressions last week. I haven't played an awful lot since then, but I can kind of, we can bounce off each other.
Yeah, I think I'll be vague, but I'll just talk about kind of like the opening, maybe 2 hours of like kind of how that's set up in broad strokes.
I want to start here by kind of underlining, I'm actually kind of surprised that you picked this up because I know that you were not a fan of Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, I kind of gassed out of Breath of the Wild. I was not as much of a fan of the beasts that they had, since that's where I was hoping for it to be temples. Mm-hmm. And it kind of fell flat. I forget where I heard this, but someone was reviewing the game and they had talked about, it was like H3 podcast I was listening to randomly, but everyone on the show were playing it and they were talking about how that's one thing that they were really happy with is that they felt that the temples were represented better in this game, that there are actual mm-hmm. temples there.
Oh, cool.
So that's kind of what sold me to back into trying it, along with kind of the news story that we talked about of like the different mechanics of the game seem interesting.
Yeah.
So I thought I'd try it out at least. Again, I'll speak in broad terms. I won't talk about the narrative at all. I don't want to spoil anything there. I mostly want to talk about the mechanics that they give you, because this game's pretty similarly structured as the Breath of the Wild, where you kind of have this locked in 2 to 3 hour tutorial of like what your base moves are. And then they let you loose in like the open world.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that the tools that they give you are much different in this one than in the previous game. And I think so far my read on it is it feels like the tools are much more open-ended and kind of much more fun for me so far. But I'm probably only like 5 to 6 hours into the game, so I don't think mm-hmm. I'm terribly far. I haven't hit any major milestones. I've mostly just been exploring the map and just kind of like picking a direction and going.
Yeah. I will ask this in vague terms. Have you been down?
No, I've been up and to the left and up and to the right.
Okay.
So yeah, that's mostly where I've gone. So did you talk about the mechanics of the game last week? Or?
Yeah. I talked about the powers and I talked a little bit about, just kind of some rudimentary building. I'm getting a little bit more kind of used to its building interface. Like the controls in this game, I think, are... very un-Nintendo like in how complex they are.
Okay.
I'm finding it very easy to kind of do stupid stuff by accident.
Like throwing your weapon away.
Yeah. Throwing my weapon away or, just super gluing the wrong thing onto the wrong spot.
Sure.
Trying to move something around and accidentally dislodging the thing that I'm holding.
Yeah, gotcha.
Just stuff like that. It feels a little ungainly.
Yeah. That's an interesting choice that they have where if you like want to unstick something, you jiggle the controller back and forth on what you're hovering and then hopefully it unsticks correctly.
Honestly, that sounds like the most Nintendo control I've ever heard.
Jiggling. Yeah. It's like you go left to right with the joystick back and forth and after a few seconds it detaches, but it very much feels like a gesture and not like a do this and this happens sort of thing.
I mean, that's kind of their thing. Ill-advised gesture-based inputs.
Yeah. So
I'm not even talking about the gestures. Like, that's kind of a minor example of it. It's just more like, hold this while you're doing this, and, you've got to go into a menu and decide to hold all of these limes and walk
yes.
up.
Yes.
Yeah.
The cooking's the same as it was in the previous game, right?
That wasn't my favorite thing about the previous game.
Yeah, either. For sure. I had to relearn what the controls were for that. But yeah, and it's very unintuitive. They don't tutorialize the cooking that much. But yeah, you need to go into your item menu, press X, and Link will have like a holding pose. And then you just add a bunch of shit for him to hold, and it's up to 5. And then you have to stand near a pot, and then you can drop everything and cook in a pot if you want to. The alternative is if you just have an open fire, you can just drop stuff around the fire. It'll catch on fire, and then they'll cook that way.
That'll cook individual items, but it won't do the mixing.
Correct.
Can you use your sword to make shish kebabs?
Probably. That would be awesome. So that's one thing that's much different in this one. Is one of the powers is that you can combine your weapon with just random shit that's around. So like you can take a sword and you can put a wood stick on the end of it. And now you have like a double sword that you can hit people with at range or you can have a spear and you can add a rock to the end of it, and now you got a rock spear.
Yeah.
It's just like, yeah, it's, yeah. And it gets cooler than that. Like, there's like, you can build like flamethrower type things. You can get these cool wands and stuff like that just from beating other people. That's kind of the hook that I'm there for, is kind of like playing around with the open-endedness and seeing what I can do. Mm-hmm. The one kind of small like downside of the building stuff is, at least with the tools that they give you early on, it's not very efficient to build like a machine and use it. It's a lot easier to just walk to wherever you need to go.
Yeah, because it goes away as soon as, yes, you, like, if you go into a shrine or something. My understanding, yeah, is like eventually you get like auto build and you can save configurations.
Okay, yeah, yeah, that would definitely be helpful. But yeah, it is, but it is still fun. Like, even if it's inefficient, building like a 4-wheel cart and then jumping, mm-hmm, on it and riding it down a hill, it's just fun, you know?
It's real cruel of them to, at the start, drop you right next to a bunch of wheels and some planks, mm-hmm, but not give you anything that will help you steer it.
A fan. Oh yeah, that too. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You've got a fan and there's no way to steer it. So it's like, yeah, oh, if I went off the road, let me just pick it back up and put it on there. All right, we're, yeah, going straight. Yeah.
Yeah, you're going as the stone flies, I guess, which... but yeah, I do like the build mechanics. I do. It's again, it's... the same, I think with Breath of the Wild, I would consistently say I respect the game, but I did not have fun with it. The respect is still there in this game, where it's very impressive like how open-ended it is. Like, in a lot of the same interactions are there, where it's like, if you light a field on fire, that creates an updraft, you can use that and go upward if you want to. Mm-hmm. They're just adding more tools and making it more like Lego-like, essentially, with this one. Yeah. And one thing I like about the shrines more in this one than the first game, in the first one, I was kind of expecting like Portal-esque puzzles, and I was kind of disappointed by that because they felt like a little bit unpolished. This time going into it, it feels very much that the shrines are tutorials, like, hey, do you know that this works like this? And it's more like a test that way. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if maybe I was approaching the Breath of the Wild in the wrong way and that maybe this one's more clear to me. But it feels more forgiving, I guess, this time, where maybe I'm not expecting as much from the puzzles. That, yeah, said, I'm still hoping that there are actual factual dungeons, you know, mm-hmm, in the game that challenge you this in the way that the previous like Zelda games did.
Yeah, so. I couldn't say because I haven't been pursuing the main quest at all.
Yeah,
like I've got the places I could go, but in reality, that just serves as, hey, don't go here if you want to. Don't go here unless you want a bunch of story stuff to start.
Gotcha. Yeah. So again, without spoiling too much, once you kind of get out of the tutorial land, you're basically given like 4 points of interest you can go to. I've, mm-hmm, gone to 2 of them. One of them is too cold and one of them is too hot. And there's a way to get past the too hot one, but it costs money. And I don't know a way yet to get past the cold one beyond like cooking like food or whatever.
Yeah.
But that's not a like long-term solution. So,
no.
So that's kind of where I'm at in the progress of the game. But again, I'm pretty impressed by it. I think it seems like there's, like, this feels so much better comparing it to like Jedi Survivor, where it's like, there's, I know, right? That's maybe an unfair comparison, but like, they're both like going for a similar feeling of like this open world exploring type of thing. But with Jedi Survivor, it feels like you're doing a checklist and there's not much, you know, variation in the things you're exploring. Like, it's just like, oh, I'm doing a moveset and B moveset. Whereas, yeah, like in Breath of the Wild, there's so much more discovery in the same way of like Subnautica, where it's like, there's a lot of bespoke areas that kind of give you like the thrill of discovery when you find them. Like, you notice like, oh, hey, this looks like a rock that I can explode through on the side of this mountain. Let me do that. Oh, sweet. There's a cave in here. Oh, that has this in it. That's awesome. You know, like things like that are really well done in this game. And the fact that it just rewards like exploration is really nice.
Yeah. What are the towns and cities in this?
I have found a couple, but there didn't seem to be an abundance of things to do. They still have the horse areas every once in a while where you can like save your horse. I tamed one horse, but I didn't save it, so I'm, mm-hmm, still a horseless man. Yeah.
So does it have many NPCs?
Yeah, I'd say so. There, I mean, it feels similar to Breath of the Wild and how it's distributed, where there's a lot of like weird goblin enemies that you kind of run into if you're going around on the field. But then there's a lot of like towns where there's like centralized NPCs that you can talk to.
Yeah, and they'll send you out on like little mini quests and stuff like that. Like,
yeah,
nobody has anything particularly interesting to say, but. Mm. I don't know. Can you name a Zelda game where that's been true in the past? Maybe Majora's Mask.
Yeah, I was going to say, by way of comparison, the last Zelda game I played was Majora's Mask.
Ooh. Yeah, that was kind of a unique thing.
That's too bad.
Yeah, I've heard people make comparisons on this one too, but I think that might have more to do with the fact that kind of both of them are, you know, made in similar engines and feel and play the same, as opposed to the jump between like Ocarina and Wind Waker or whatever. Yeah.
I do really like in this game how it gives you the freedom to just like look at a point on the map and be like, I want to walk there. And then you can go walk there and you can go climb whatever that is and find out stuff. I think they do a better job in this one, whereas like in the first game, you were really kind of like shunted off of certain areas by like it being like cold restricted or just being like straight up vertical and you couldn't climb it. Whereas like here, it's more like there's challenging things to climb, but you can definitely go anywhere. You might get blocked down like tunnels within an area, but you feel like you have more freedom to explore in any direction.
And the addition of the ascend power is its own, you know, blessing.
Yeah,
I heard today on the Waypoint podcast, just like, oh, that was a dev tool. Like the developers got tired of needing to climb everywhere, so they built in like, okay, just like ascend the surface above wherever I am, and they figured, oh, we can actually like design cool spaces around this. Well, there's no problem with us just like giving it to people out of the gate, and then that's how we got it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's sweet.
Yeah.
So, most important question. Does it have the belly dance costume from Breath of the Wild?
The Gerudo one? I don't know.
I don't know either. I have not explored that area yet.
No.
You'll have to wait and find out.
Nice. Do you have anything else about Tears of the Kingdom?
Not really. Think it's good so far, but we'll see. I'll be curious to see if it's similar to Breath of the Wild, where it's like I play for X hours and kind of peter out on it, or if I actually play it to like completion and beat the boss or whatever. Mm-hmm. So we'll see.
Nice. Jala, looking at your list, you've got a new one on here. You've got a beta. Talk about them in whatever order you want, but that's why I'm going to you next.
Okay, so the first one I'm going to talk about relates to last week's stuff. So I will talk about this one first. Sarah is missing, or SIM. This game says, notice me, senpai. Anyway, it's Kaigan Games' first game prior to making the Simulacra franchise. I talked about two last time I was on. It was developed by Monsoon Lab for a game jam in 2016, and Simulacra was released the next year in 2017. It's available for free on mobile and itch.io. It's a found phone murder mystery horror game thing, just like the Simulacra games are. As you can tell from the title, you are trying to, like, you find the phone of a girl named Sarah, and she is missing. And you are working with Iris, which is the AI in Sarah's phone, to try to find her and get her back safely. And the AI also works as the hint system for the game. And of course, it's a branching path narrative with a bunch of different endings. You interact with other characters, unlock info on the phone, etc., to further the plot. Again, this is all Simulacra-like, but it is not as complex as the Simulacra games are. Like, there aren't as many options, there aren't as many puzzles or anything like that. You can definitely see the bones here of what they did later, and that's really what I was looking for, was to see, like, what was the first iteration like, you know? And this is pretty much like that first iteration before they got to the Simulacra games. And this one deals with a cult rather than the Simulacra entity. So it leaves a lot of open-ending questions at the end of it, at least with the ending that I got. And it also is kind of fun because it makes references to Ghost in the Shell standalone complex and the Mark of Sacrifice from Berserk, which is one of the symbols that the cult uses. And mm-hmm. then also Jill from Resident Evil. So yes, it yeah. definitely is saying, notice me, senpai.
Right. Yeah. The fans will be served.
Yes, indeed. So, yeah. Do you want me to talk about the new thing first? Or you want me to talk about the other thing? I don't have a whole lot to say first, and then
I'll talk about the last. Oh, go ahead, Ben.
I had one question about Sarah's missing. Like, how much FMV is in the game? Is it like a lot of video?
I say the whole thing. It's got the phone interface for a large part of it, but then there's also a bunch of videos. You do sometimes have video chats and photos that are sent back and forth between you and the other characters that you're interacting with on the phone and things like that. It doesn't have as much full motion video as the Simulacra games do, but that's, again, this was a Game Jam game, so they were working more with like still images, not so many actual like FMV things.
Gotcha. Yeah. Cool.
Do the other one you don't have much to say about, but just remember that I didn't tell you to play it.
Yeah, so the one that Cole did not tell me to play is Chaos Head Noah. This game is incapable of touching grass. So, like, people who know anything about the protagonist of this game will understand that. I know, Cole, you've talked about it before, I think, on the show, but it's
loathsome protagonist.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that you say that. I'll get there. I'll get there. Put a pin in that. Okay. It's a 2008 science fiction visual novel by 5PB and Nitro Plus. It was the first installment of the science adventure series, just to remind folks if it's been a while or you didn't hear the episodes where Colt was talking about it.
Same series as Steins Gate. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And this game follows Takumi Nishijo, who gets involved in the New Gen serial murder case, and he frequently experiences delusions and hallucinations, some of which the player can influence, which affects the progression of the story. And I didn't even realize there was a delusion trigger mechanism that you can change. Like, for the first, like,
4/5 of the game. Yeah.
I didn't even realize until I was like 1.5 chapters in, because I Googled how many chapters are in this game. And then I saw a spoiler-free walkthrough. And then I just looked at the beginning to see what it says about like how to play. Because I was mm-hmm. like, I'm not really having a whole lot of options here. I thought there was going to be some more mechanics. And then it was like, oh, there's a delusion trigger. How come the game didn't explain to me how to play it, like, at all?
Doesn't.
Like, you know, I granted, I don't like tutorials, but they didn't even drop like a, hey, by the way, at this point, you know, like this, or dump you at like a control screen or a hint menu or anything. Like, there's nothing that tells you.
On screen prompt?
Yeah, like, an on-screen prompt. That's all I need. I don't even need an explanation. Just to say left trigger, right trigger, or whatever, and let me figure it out from there.
I thought that there were some scenes that were just staticky and had like a weird little vignette kind of over it. Those are decision points, but only some of them matter.
Well, and the thing is that those decision points, to me, it registered like, okay, this is something that's going to change the next time I play this game, depending upon the choices that I make, is what I thought. And then mm-hmm. I'm like, there's too many of these for that to be the thing. Like, this has to be something else. And that's another reason why I was like, well, let me just see like what the mechanics are. So that's a failure. That's a straight failure. Anyway, I don't really like the art style. And the story itself is not terribly gripping to me, but I do want to see how the series kicked off, since Steins Gate Zero is my favorite visual novel and one of mm-hmm. my favorite games overall. And about Takumi, the main character, he doesn't actually upset me as much as other characters from other games, such as
Sigma from VLR.
Sigma from VLR, or the dude from AI Insomnia Files, or whatever. Somnium Files, there you go. Or the, like, Date, I think his name is. Anyway, whoever that guy is, that guy irritated me. Sigma, especially. Takumi does not, and the reason why is because I see in him different elements of a bunch of different guys that I know and have known in my life. Like, some of his disposition stuff, some of the way he thinks, some of the stuff he thinks about, these are things that, like, I have heard from a bunch of different guys that I know. As a result, like, it's all like coalesced into one individual that's just like the embodiment of this stuff that I've seen from a number of different people. But, like, he seems like more of an actual person to me because I've known people like him versus Sigma, for example.
Yeah.
So
the thing that was most off-putting to me was not necessarily like his struggles, you know, like the distance that he has, you know, from other people and stuff. It was the very specifically the way that he seems to relate to everything up to and including his little sister in terms of fetish hentai.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
But again, I have known people who are like this. So like they are so inundated and so otaku that everything is translated through that lens. Everything is translated through that lens. So yeah, like, again, I've known people like that. So like, do I like it? No, but I'm also not like throwing my Switch somewhere or something because I'm just like,
I take
a big sigh, right? I take a big sigh and I'm just like, okay, whatever. Yeah. But
it feels less like a straight up cartoon to you because you've actually encountered this IRL.
Well, there's that. And then there's also the fact that Sigma actually is physically doing things that are gross and saying things that are gross to people. Whereas this guy, at least so far in the game, thinks it and then just is a very timid person that doesn't actually say or do anything that's like what he's thinking. He's thinking it, but those are his private thoughts. And yes, we are privy to those, but he's also not insisting in being gross and getting in a woman's face or whatever and all of that mess, like how Sigma is, which triggers a lot of like my, you know, history of assault and stuff. Like, I don't dig that. But this guy, like, it's his own thoughts. And he doesn't act on them. So like that doesn't trigger things to me in the same way. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
So anyway, I don't know. I'm in chapter 3 somewhere. It's a long game, but at the same time, I've already put so long into this game as it is that I'm just like, why would I want to stop now and then go watch the anime and have to go start from the beginning again? Yeah. Like, I will just continue to play this game. It's fine. It actually like, it has like that slow start that the first Steins Gate has, and it just took its time to get to where it was going. And I'm like, God, surely it's going to pick up sometime. Does it pick up as it goes, or is it like this pace the whole time?
Yeah. There's a certain point, I would say around like chapter 5 or 6, when it starts picking up and things of consequence really start happening, which is very damning when you're talking about, I think, a 12 chapter game, 10, I forget how many chapters it is. Like, stuff starts happening and then they start making choices that feel very at odds with it being a visual novel. You know, like when you look at like any of the art about this, you see like these big ornate swords. That factors in and it's weird. But, you know, all it's asking of you is to use your imagination more than you would expect to use it in a visual medium.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that like Steins Gate, the first Steins Gate, I remember it was glacially paced for the first like four chapters at least. And I was just bored out of my mind. Like, I mean, yes, it's kind of interesting, but at the same time, it's like, tells me that they're it picks up and it does.
Yeah.
But this is like that. The pacing is all weird. It's not, you know, like definitely by Steins Gate Zero, they do so much better with the pacing, but you know, there's steps to get there.
It's funny that a series about time travel has problems with time management.
Well, they have all the time in the world anyway. Okay.
As long as they can repeat it over and over again. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I have nothing else to say about it.
it's funny. I kind of want to check out and play, Robotics Notes, which I'm less like subject matter interested in because I don't really necessarily care a lot about mecha, you know, like I'm fine with the mecha, but it's not my favorite thing. But I want to see like where exactly on the trajectory of the studio they learned how to pace a story.
Yeah,
because like Chaos Child picks up and works pretty well even from the start. By virtue of having better art and better characters and having the events, the previous one to at least build off of, you know, this history of New Gen murders, in Shibuya. But like, I don't know, they could have also made this drag ass with the premise that they have, but they just kind of didn't. So like, I don't know, basically what I want is enough data points to, to know if I would be foolish to be hopeful for something like Anonymous Code or, you know, whatever they're coming up with next. Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's kind of like I played Sarah's Missing, which is, again, like a kind of prequel slash beginning to Kygon Games Studio and to their Simulacro work, which I like. So, mm-hmm. you know, this is kind of like the installment of the show where I am just like mostly examining, you know, 2 out of 3 are just examining the roots of something, right? You know?
Yeah.
And just getting that kind of history.
Mm-hmm. What happens when you examine the future of something?
Steins Gate Zero.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were alley-ooping me for and my own alley-oop towards talking about Street Fighter VI.
Yeah, I guess so. I can do that too.
I was presumptuous. Did you have other things to say about Chaos and Noah?
I really don't. I have nothing else to say about that.
Yeah.
Like I'm not mad at it. It's slow. Mm-hmm. I don't really care about any of the characters, but I'm just curious to see how things work. And I'm glad I know now that there is actually like a mechanism for me to do stuff. The end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
Fez is cool. I like her. Yeah.
So Street Fighter VI, I played the beta this last weekend. So it was available from May 19th through the 21st. And mm-hmm. so to use a Dave Jacksonism, this game fucks.
So, is that a good thing?
Yes, in this context this is meant to be a good thing. So a thing earlier today that was said was, oh, Metal Gear Rising Revengeance or whatever, you know, it still fucks. It and fucks. I was like,
yeah. See, normally I expect that times, from like yeah. from like a hentai game.
Yeah, but. No. Although
I say this fucks all the time.
Yeah. Okay, well then I don't know if it was a original to him or if it was a Cole-ism that he picked up.
No, it's not original. But still, tell me where this guy is and I'm going to fight him. No.
He's the best. No. Yeah. Okay, anyway.
You're going to fight him on Street Fighter VI.
Yeah, right. Okay, so it is going to be released on June 2. The open beta, as I said, was May 19th through the 21st. The info that I'm sharing about this game is a mixture of what I learned from playing the beta for a little bit and also what I looked at when I was Googling around online, because I didn't have tons and tons of time to play, but I did play a little bit. Mm-hmm. So you have like the character creation, and that character creation is pretty in depth. You can create your character with whatever body you want and select your identity as male, female, or just human, just to simplify things. And it is extremely, extremely detailed. You can change so many different things. And people have told me about some of the wild looking characters that have come out the other side of this creation thing. But like there are a lot of details you can put in there. Like I made a character that looked like me because I'm, you know, just like that. I just make the character that looks like me and in most games. But I was able to put like moles on my body and things like that, to the detail of that caliber where you're putting that. You can put little tattoos, you can put all different kinds of stuff and age your face and all different kinds of like just minute details you can adjust. So it's pretty neat. They had the character creation, ranked matches, casual matches, battle hub matches, open tournaments, training mode, hub goods shop, extreme battles, game center, challenges, DJ booth, photo spot, a lot of different stuff to do.
Jeez, I thought Dragon Ball FighterZ had too much going on.
Oh, there's a lot to do. And they are kind of taking from that because they have that battle hub thing going on where you have mm-hmm. your little character that pops up in like an area where there's other players hanging out. And then you can sit at arcade cabinets with them and play against them or whatever. So during the beta, you could play Luke, Jamie, Ryu, Chun-Li, Guile, Kimberly, Juri, or Ken. So they didn't have all of the characters available, but you could play a few. I played a little bit with Kimberly, who is the new Black American character that was created using the input from Black Capcom workers, as well as a Black consultant that they hired wisely so that they do not have like these caricatures, because, you know, Street Fighter's been known for a long time for those caricatures. This game, from all the artwork and stuff that I've seen, really is down trying to undo all of that and not do these ridiculous characters, but actually make them more solid, grounded, and like realistic.
Mm-hmm.
So without actually being hyper realistic, like they are very stylized looking characters.
The characters look kind of like Fortnites to me, at least in stills. And I don't know how I feel about that. Like, how is it in motion?
It looks really good. Like, the game has some really good graphics to it. It's nice and smooth. It's fun to play. And, you know, like, just the overall feel of all the stages and all of the artwork in general and everything is just focused on, like, street art, street culture, you know, all the way that all the characters are dressed are more like that. The soundtrack is more hip hop. So this is stuff that, like, works for me because, you know, like I come from a hip hop background. So I'm like, oh, this is all very cool. I really dig this aesthetic.
And even the ring commentators, like the most of the options that they have are on the more casual and energetic side. My understanding.
Yeah, I have heard that the commentators get really repetitive after a while when you're playing, though. So, yeah. Like, you know, you probably, you know, you want to try it a little bit, see how that's like, and go, okay, enough of that, and turn it back off again, probably. Mm-hmm. But at least they did try to make it feel like esports, right? So, yeah. You know, like that's at least a step that they're trying to, you know, give you a more immersive experience and give you more things to do that you can kind of hang out. And it's not just, I'm going to go through the arcade mode, you know? So they have a character named Eternity, who is the host of the Battle Hub. This is a gender ambiguous, enthusiastic character who hosts.
And a incredibly snappy dresser.
Yeah. And like they host Channel Eternity. So, you know, like also playing into the familiarity with like streaming and YouTube and stuff like that. And they welcome you. And I read some comments somewhere that said, glad to see Capcom still loves the fifth element in movie references. So I thought I would just throw that out there. So, yeah, a lot of people have commented on it, but Street Fighter VI shows promise in providing that variety of gender expressions, body types, and more grounded cultural representations. And so, yeah, it feels to me overall like the shift that they're going towards is definitely a win. Mm-hmm. You know, like they're actually kind of more aware of their audience and actually, you know, trying to make a game for them. So that's good.
Yeah.
But about the different modes. So Fighting Ground is an all-encompassing mode containing the core modes the franchise is known for. This includes the arcade / story mode, versus, extreme battle, training, and online modes. Online mode is going to have cross-platform play capability. So that's cool. Arcade mode, of course, you already know what that is. Versus mode, you know. It will have one-on-one as well as team battles available in the versus mode. Extreme mode actually allows you to set modifiers like no jumping or no special moves, and you can also add in other chaotic elements like having bombs drop randomly or a bull running through the arena randomly. So that's cool. Then World Tour mode is the most interesting addition that I've read about. You can create your avatar like you do, like how I did in the beta, and you can fight your way around the world starting in Metro City from the Final Fight series. And you can challenge citizens in the city to fights and go to boutiques for new clothes, get power-ups from food trucks. And then as you go through and you challenge some of the world heroes or whatever, you can get some of their signature techniques like Ryu's Dragon Punch or Chun-Li's Spinning Bird Kick. And then like add that to your arsenal and build up your character. So by the time you get to the end of it, like you've got all of these moves unlocked on your original character, which is neat.
It's kind of like they're making it into like a light Yakuza, like action RPG. Sounds like.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. So the gameplay is similar to 4 and 5, but with more weight to the characters, making things feel like more impactful and it doesn't feel so floaty. So that's cool. And what's new to this is the drive gauge. You can use it to parry attacks or power up special moves. And it fills up when you land successful blows, but drains when you use the energy. And if you lose all of your drive, you enter burnout mode where you can't use the drive gauge at all. So the game is really encouraging you to play aggressively.
They just like me.
Yeah. So the game is really encouraging you to fight aggressively is kind of the point here. Yeah. So, because like you're not going to just be able to block and fill up your gauge blocking forever, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Sounds like almost like a combo meter or like a Oh gosh, God Hand had a similar system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, and there are three control schemes. This is also really, really cool. So there's Classic, Modern, and Dynamic. Classic is the typical six-button Street Fighter layout, three punches, three kicks. Modern is a four-button scheme like in the most recent Marvel vs. Capcom titles. So you have three attack buttons and a special move button. And then Dynamic is even simpler, and it allows you to attack or combo automatically with one button. So this means that it's accessible for people who, number one, were not raised on these games. Number two, have disabilities or movement stuff, you know, like whatever the thing is, or don't want to have, you know, don't have the patience to deal with that, but they want to play this game and engage with it. Well, you can. No. There is a variety of, you know, different ways that you can control your input methods.
Have you heard any speculation yet on, like, relative balance between the different input modes?
I have not heard anything about that at this point. Since it's still in beta and is not released, like, overall, like, there's not a lot of stuff out there about it yet. I mean, like, there is, but there isn't, if that makes sense. Like, there's just not enough people playing it that talk about it. But I do know that you can switch control schemes at any time. So if, like, you are in the middle of a battle and you're like, oh, why did I pick this control scheme? You don't have to like exit out and come back in or anything. You can just switch it. Hmm. So, but yeah, the music, like I mentioned already, it's more hip hop. It is more like Street Fighter 3. So like think about Street Fighter 3 music. That's about what this sounds like. And you can also, like you mentioned, Cole, there's that commentary. But again, it gets pretty repetitive. But all in all, it looks like it's a solid, modernized installment to a series that's been going on forever. And I'm actually really looking forward to it. And I wish I had money to buy it when it first comes out, but I don't. So, like, I don't know when I'm going to be able to buy it, but it definitely is on the wish list.
Nice. Well, I'm happy that it's landing for you.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that's all you got?
That is all I got. I will share a picture of like the back of my character next to a picture of me, though, so you can see that. But I'll put that in the Slack for you guys.
Cool. Yep. I'll do mine. So over the weekend, I did some streaming. And I've got two of them that I want to talk about. The first one is called Night Stop, which is a narrative horror game, short little lo-fi horror thing that Jala first brought my attention to, although she has no recollection of doing that.
Nope, at least it's been a while.
That sounds very thematically appropriate.
I mean, all these recommendations, they end up on a list. It's like a 20-minute little thing. You are driving, you're a guy driving through the Midwest when you come upon, you're going to your hometown, but you come upon a gas station that didn't used to be there. And you go in and nobody's in it, but you do find a VHS tape that shows horrible things happening. And you play the, you know, what's on the tape. And then there's a section after you play it. Because it's 20 minutes, it's very difficult to talk about it in a way that you know, doesn't spoil the story. But if you've seen me stream anything of this fidelity, you're kind of from this movement of kind of lo-fi first person horror games, you're gonna know exactly what this is. You know, some light puzzle solving, a little bit of pursuit, although I think in this one it's more about giving you the feeling of danger in the place of actually putting you in danger. Yeah, it's pretty good. There's some really cool fucked up imagery that you get to see, not just from a gore standpoint, but like from a surreality standpoint, which is what I want. I mean, ideally I would like surreal gore, you know, I think there's also some of that on display here, and it's neat. Good.
I like how the basis of the horror is that, you know, something is developed in the Midwest while you were away.
That's not right. Well, that can't be.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that tracks.
Yeah. So I'd recommend it. It's on itch, itch or itch.io or itch.io, however you say it. I like to say itch.io. I think it's only like a couple of bucks. Throw this developer some money. The other thing that I streamed is a Doom map Specifically, this is the hot new Doom map that is taking the world by storm. This is called myhouse.wad, WAD being the file format for Doom maps, right? The message board post on the Doom forums where you go to download this describes kind of the provenance of this, or, you know, the metafiction around it, which is the developer recently, their old childhood friend passed away, and they went home for the funeral. And when their parents were cleaning out their stuff, they found some floppy disks of, you know, like old projects. This person and their friend used to develop Doom maps. And, you know, the one that has been kind of cleaned up and presented to you is, you know, myhouse.wad, which at the start feels like one of the things that anybody in a map making situation will do first is make 1-1 in or Mario 1-1 if it's a side scroller, or in first person you make what you know, like you model your house. Do that in The Sims too, right? So this presents itself as like a very basic Doom level that is just the suburban house. But very quickly, you know, after you kill these enemies and start going around and finding the keys, you open a door and then things start getting like non-Euclidean, to the point where like you see stuff, you know, when you're looking out through the windows that is not there. And when you know, that wasn't there before, when you go out, that stuff isn't there. But when you look in, there's different stuff inside the house. And then everything starts kind of like warping around you, and these illogical spaces start kind of folding in on each other. And it turns into this big house of leaves clusterfuck expressed in the Doom engine, which is not necessarily predisposed to doing this.
Well, you literally, like, the Doom engine famously can't express verticality.
Yes. Like, so like going up and down, you know, in your, you know, in this house, is a very strange thing. Like you would, it would be unremarkable. It would still be cool because of the artistic decisions that are made in this, but it would be unremarkable to see this done in the Build engine, the engine that I know Duke Nukem 3D is in. I believe Blood is in it as well. Like even maps within those games end up doing like that, you know, illogical spaces, you know, stuff changes when you're not looking, or, you know, a hallway doubles back around on itself, stuff like that. Like it's made to express that kind of stuff. This is doing all kinds of like crazy trickery, specifically with GZ Doom, kind of the updated Doom engine, in order to make this stuff happen. And it is seamless. Like there's no loading. It's not going to a new map. It's just like, okay, you fall, and then all of a sudden you are in a version of the house that is like burned down. You know, you go through, you know, and suddenly things are different sizes and stuff. It's just real cool. And over the course of the 2 hours that I streamed, I didn't, based on what I have read afterwards, I didn't even see like half of it. Because there's like a story and there are collectibles and there are multiple endings and stuff. It's just real cool. And it'll sound like I've spoiled this for you. It really, no, like you've got to go and play it, because like just playing and moving around the space itself is a very neat puzzle.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah.
House of Leaves, the video game.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of the better expressions of that, that I have seen, honestly. And it's weird that it has been done through, through a Doom map. Yeah.
That's neat. I saw part of that.
That is very cool.
Yeah.
Are you generally, big into, into what they call them, boomer shooters or whatever?
I'm not getting them. I've not played very many. Like I've played Dusk. I think Dusk is really cool. Yeah, I'm excited for the Slayers X one that's coming out. The spin-off game from Hypnospace Outlaw. That looks rad as hell. Yeah, that's a boomer shooter designed by one of the characters from Hypnospace Outlaw. Nice. That's coming out real soon, I think on the 1st of June or something like that.
I actually didn't realize there's a Warhammer 40K one coming out today, actually.
Yeah, I didn't know that until I saw like a front page article about that on some site. Yeah. The other thing that I have been doing, because I'm trying to get a little bit more active, I wanted to run a little experiment and check and see if drumming was as strenuous as I remembered. And now that I have like a, you know, I've had an Apple Watch for a long time, but now that I'm using the fitness tracking, just kind of see like what that amounts to from like a heart rate and, you know, calorie burn kind of point of view. So I pulled out my Rock Band drum kit with the pro symbols and stuff like that, and fired up Rock Band 4 and bought a whole bunch of DLC, just songs that have been released either that I didn't pick up before or, you know, came out after Rock Band 3. You know, there's just a whole bunch of DLC I wasn't even following that it released, and went back in, and I can comfortably say this is still one of my favorite kinds of games, and I want them to come back. I know why they can't, you know, just because of like inventory space and stuff like that, costs, plastic, all that stuff. But man, is drumming really, really, really fun. And the so in the move from Rock Band 3 to Rock Band 4, they got rid of a bunch of the pro stuff. So like Rock Band 3 had the keyboards, you know, whole other instrument you could play. And one of the notation modes was pro keyboards, where it actually, you know, on the two octaves, it showed you, you know, what keys to press. So you were effectively playing the song. They also had pro guitar. And then there were pro drums. They scaled back they got rid of the keyboard entirely because, you know, it's not a good fit for all the songs, you know, like just a lot doesn't really get anything to do with it. The pro guitar was kind of a boondoggle, you know, like you had to have a very special controller or an adapter. It didn't really work.
If you had Rocksmith for some reason.
Yeah. Rocksmith kind of picked that up and ran with it and did a much better job. But the pro drums, they had that tracking data anyway, because they used it to rig the animations. So like they've got the expert level track and every single hit is charted there. So it kind of doesn't matter if they just how they display it or choose to register it. A cymbal hit is already, you know, in the system as a cymbal hit versus a tom hit or a snare hit kind of deal. So they kept the pro drums, and that is, I'm surprised that I haven't lost as much, skill in the move. You know, in the many, many years since I played it, I basically fell out of the habit of doing the drumming once I started living in a series of upstairs apartments. But now that I live in a house and there's nothing below me but firm, firm concrete, fuck it, man. I'm going to pound away on this thing. So I've been very happy to know that, like, you know, I have to kind of hang around and like hard on the easier songs and medium on the harder songs, but like I've still got playing drum in this game, and from the point of view of the workout kind of thing, like playing for an hour keeps my heart rate like very firmly in the lighter cardio, like I don't know what zone it is or something. But like it keeps it like very firmly in that range. And it's like, well, that won't always be the case if I continue getting fitter. But for right now, like I cannot think of a more fun way to just kind of keep moving, mm-hmm. you know? So it's kind of working on all fronts. So here I am. Here I am bringing this very, very old game to the show, basically to let you know that peripheral based rhythm games still fuck.
And also so, Just Dance does too. I need to play more of that. It's just it's hard for me to get the retail area, like in the living room.
yeah so. rhythm games, they're fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
have you considered, you know, any of the like Beat Saber or any of the other kind of comparable things?
Yeah I like Beat Saber. For any of the more strenuous ones, here's the thing. I sweat a lot. And something that is terrible inside of a VR headset is sweating.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
Whereas with Rock Band, I can just kind of keep a, I can kind of keep a towel thrown over my shoulder in case I need it, you know, that kind of thing. So
yeah, no, that totally makes sense.
But yeah, Beat Saber is really good. I just, I don't know, between Rocksmith and this, having a way to kind of like much more directly connect with the music, you know, and with the DLC that is available for who knows how much longer, like that could go offline at any minute, you know, in terms of being able to buy it anymore. But like, I've got hundreds of songs that I know and like that I can just go into and like make a long playlist and just get a whole bunch of uninterrupted play in. So sure. I don't know. It's neat. Rock Band still good.
Yeah.
That's me. David, how about you?
Yeah, so I actually also have something new. I picked up Punch Club. Which is kind of a funny name, because that's not how it works. You swing club, you punch fist.
That was my question.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I feel like it really invites that question. But no, I was kind of inspired to get this because I saw on YouTube that Punch Club 2 is apparently releasing sometime in 2023. So this is basically I think it would be considered like a time allocation game.
It's a management sim. It's like a tycoon management thing.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, yeah. So, you know, you are a martial artist who is actually attempting to kind of do everything. I haven't quite figured out yet what the core critical path story is. You have to, you know, manage building up your various, you know, physical stats by working out, which is, you know, made complicated by the fact that every day at the end of the day, you lose some of your stat points in these areas, you know, kind of simulating the fact that if you don't keep working out, you'll get out of shape. At the same time, you have to manage food and sleep, which means you have to find time to work. And then you have to, engage in various fights to build up skill points. So it's a lot of
like a life sim, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's very much a, you know, you have 12 hours in every day and you have four main stats: health, happiness, hunger, and energy. And yeah, you're trying to balance all of these while trying to keep going in the right direction in terms of getting more powerful. From what I've seen, it seems like that's the biggest thing people don't like about it, the game, is that it can be a little, I don't know, frustrating, or you have to do a lot to, make sure you're keeping your stats up because they degrade relatively quickly. And I know they've, definitely announced in Punch Club 2 that stat degradation will not be a thing.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, so I don't know how they're going to balance it, but it does seem like they've kind of realize that people don't like that and are, going to build around that.
Yeah. I mean, that might be one of those things where like realism isn't fun, but like, I don't know, keeping up with, you know, keeping your performance up seems to be a pretty important part of simulating being a pro athlete.
Right. Right. Exactly. Especially since, you know, as kind of a management game or whatever, you know, if you can just kind of grind and be good at everything, that seems like that a little bit subverts the core gameplay.
Yeah,
although I think some of that gets into the fact that while you know there are the fights, and you know those are interesting, you have to the fights are basically auto battles. You can slot up to five skills And one of the big mechanics you're playing around is every attack uses energy. So you have to make sure to balance, you know, using the most powerful skills you can while also, you know, not just burning through all your energy.
It's very funny that they give you this beautiful beat 'em up art style and put you in fight situations, and then it's not a fighter. That is, that is very funny to me. Not that I want it to be a fighter. It's just I can.
It's not what you would expect.
Yeah, yeah.
But the real reason you're there is just the completely bonkers storyline. So it's kind of, it's got a branching tree path, story tree that you can, you know, look up at any time to see what you've done and what you still have to do. Mm-hmm. But it's, I do know that eventually there are decisions that are like, you know, the story either goes this way or this way. But it seems like for the most part, it's more just different areas you can explore. Mm-hmm. So, so far I've got the actual like championship that I'm trying to work my way up towards in order to, become a contender. I've also though got, underground, no rules fights. I met, name? Tyler from Fight Club and, can join that. If I work for a pizza delivery company, however, if I buy a too spicy of a pizza, I start hallucinating and get sent to deliver a
baby
pizza to a random sewer where I then get jumped by a Teenage Mutant Ninja alligator.
Well, yeah. What'd you expect to happen?
Yeah, as you do. I also, anytime if you're carrying a lot of cash, then when you're traveling between areas, there's a chance that you get mugged and, basically get forced into an unexpected fight.
Mm-hmm.
And after winning a couple of those, my character got fed up with it and became a masked vigilante.
Okay.
So, basically what I'm saying here is, the game goes approximately everywhere and, references just about any, say like 70s to, aughts, fighting, movie or franchise. Mm-hmm. And that's to say nothing of just the weird, like Easter eggs. So just like the owner of the pizza shop is Steven Seagal's character from Siege.
Under Siege,
right.
Get the titles of movies starring horrible monsters right.
Yeah, as you do.
You're working Under Siege.
Yes. And outside of the convenience store, there's two people that look a great deal like Jay and Silent Bob.
Interesting.
Just basically everything is random, beautiful pixel art, homages to pop culture.
Mm-hmm. This game is like the uncertainty principle. Like the closer you observe it, the less like a boxing game it is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Got nothing to do with boxing.
So, yeah, it is interesting so far. I'm really enjoying it. I have no idea where it's actually going. It's the trailer for the next game. It apparently starts where this one leaves off, except it also establishes that you appear to be trapped inside some sort of computer simulation at the start of the next game.
I mean, did you see all the crazy stuff there? Teenage Mutant Ninja alligators, for God's sake.
I mean, that just seems plausible. I mean, what else would they be doing?
Yeah.
So yeah,
I had no idea. On. And this is the people who made Graveyard Keeper, which makes the references make a lot of sense.
Okay. Is that also kind of a similar?
Yeah, it's pretty cheeky about that stuff. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Great Graveyard Keeper is the game that gave us the communist donkey. you know, who hauls stuff and talks about the coming revolution.
Yeah. Man, if only real world donkeys were, you know, communists instead of
those clowns in Congress, am I right?
Yeah.
Oh man, Punch Club sounds neat.
Yeah, very good.
What else you got?
That's all I got.
Okie doke.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer it. Jala, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
I asked, what video game moment affected you most?
Simple and difficult. Let's get in here with Rick, who says the dream sequence from Disco Elysium. In a game that is rife with phenomenal scenes and moments, this one hit me the hardest. I'll never forget what it was like seeing it play out for the first time. It's a real masterclass in writing for video games. And Eli responds, I know which sequence you mean, but Time to Go to Work at the Shit Factory from the other one pops into my head almost every day. Yeah. Spoiler, mine's going to be from Disco Elysium too. Let's see, or it's going to be from Disco Elysium as well. God damn it. I knew I had to get in before you did that. Let's see if anybody else, grabs this one. Ben, what does Greg say?
Greg says, it's hard for me to decide on a single moment since I've been playing games for 40 years plus. So I'll go with a recent one that really hit me hard. I recently finished a full playthrough of the Persona games, and in Persona 5 Royale, there's a scene early on when a main character tries to commit suicide. Trigger warning, sorry. Right away, my interest in this game went from, this is going to be a fun school sim romp, like the past games, not sure if I like it yet, to, holy shit, did that just happen? Did I just see that? Who caused this so I can punish that fucker? Need to see what happens next. Emotionally invested now.
Makes sense to me. David, what does Zach say?
Zach says, the end of John's story in Red Dead Redemption. The culmination of everything he went through, only to get stabbed in the back, but still determined to go down swinging.
Yeah. Whole back part of that game. Nice. Jello, what does Sean say?
Sean says, playing the indie game Arise, A Simple Story has multiple moments that hit me harder than any other game has. You play through memories that are often whimsical and fantastical takes on the most prominent moments of the protagonist's life and tell the bittersweet story of the relationship he had with his partner. It's absolutely beautiful yet heartbreaking too, and one moment that I won't spoil had me a sobbing mess.
One of us has played this, right?
I played like an hour or two of it and then returned it. It just wasn't for me.
Okay. Yeah. I looking at the art from it, I was like, I recognize this. Huh. Yeah. I don't have anything to add on top of that other than it's cool that it worked for you. Champion Jan says, reading the diary in the lighthouse, Oblivion Dark Brotherhood quest. I forget what happens in that. Jala, you might know.
I cannot remember either.
Yeah.
Probably someone gets murdered.
Yeah, but there's got to be more to it than that.
Yeah, that was a betting man. Yeah. And no recollection. Sorry. let's see. David, did I skip you, Jala? No, I didn't. Okay. David, what does Callum say?
Callum says, there's a moment in the first Valkyria Chronicles game that did. The game's tone is part anime tropes, part introspective about the effects of war. It's a weird mix. With that, there is a death that really got me in the story.
Hmm. Still haven't played those. I know Dennis has. Dennis has played and talked about those because that was a PS3 one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see, Ben, what does Peter say?
Peter says, might be a bit more on the immersive side of gaming, but probably my most impactful moment from a video game was the first time I released a Pokemon in Pokemon Red Blue. I was maybe 9 and I had no idea what I was doing, and I released my Squirtle.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I was devastated when I realized what had happened. So began my obsession with collecting things, and probably never been able to let go of things. Note that I said things, so yeah, this has an impact not only in my video games and playstyle, but also in my personal life. Smiling sweat emoji.
you could have just turned it off. It doesn't autosave. Just send that message back. We'll get the Steins Gate machine for you.
They were a 9-year-old.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's a... I mean... The closest thing that I have is like losing to that as a kid is losing save data and having my brother taunt me and threaten to delete my save data. Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah.
Can I share some video game trauma if we're doing that?
Yes.
I don't think I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but I bought Mission Impossible for N64 and apparently my brother
I'm so sorry.
Well, okay. Yeah, that full stop. My brother wanted to buy it and play it. And so I had played up until like the last level and then I went to bed and my brother beat the game while I was asleep. And so woke up the next morning and like the game had been beaten. So I had to go back and like figure out and that's very sad.
Man. Anyway. Yeah, that's a bummer. Let's see. Jala, what does Gwen say?
Gwen says, I don't think there's a single video game moment that got me as much as the subversive would you kindly death scene in Bioshock. It made me question the idea of objectives in controlling a video game character as a metaphor that thought has been carried in my head for 15 years. It took my entire childhood of video game fun and made me instinctually reevaluate why I did anything at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Nothing to add there.
Meanwhile, when I played that game for the first time, and I played it way after it was extant, I played it and I didn't trust that guy from the beginning. I didn't at all from the beginning. So I was like, ha, I knew.
Bogey time.
It's one of those things where it's hard not to take for granted what that in particular did. You know, like obviously it wasn't the first game to do something like that, even from that developer, really. Because that was so noteworthy and groundbreaking, I think it feels like that just kind of came with the house as furniture or something.
Yeah.
But no, there was a time when that was wild and adventurous.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like I that's why I prefaced the rest of my with I played it way late, so I was in the time and I was in the know and
no
I played it way after the fact. But it's definitely a big important point in video games for sure.
It is always amazing to me the degree to which, like, if a video game community decides that something should not be spoilered, how effective they actually often are in not spoiling it for most people.
Yeah.
Like, probably the dumbest I can think of is the 343 Guilty Spark from the original Halo.
Oh, yeah. Which is like, yeah, that's a pretty dumb one to like still have this weird kind of omerta around, like, and we don't talk about it.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. And to be clear, I was not responding to you with the thing I said about taking it for granted with what I said. It was, yeah. Or to you, Jala.
Yeah. I was just clarifying for people listening. Like, I wasn't, okay. I wasn't doing the thing that Cole was talking about.
Let's see here. Keisha says, gonna go back again to my usual. Really, it is the whole scene through with Alex and Steph just really felt seen. I think they're talking about Life is Strange Before the Storm with this, based on the image here. There are likely even more. There have been a lot of moments that made me break out in tears. As it just hit me, like playing Lake as a 40-year-old software developer, questioning if she should just move to a small town and be a postal worker. I need to play that. It's a game about moving to a small town and being a postal worker.
You gotta wait till you're 40, Cole.
Yeah. Oh, man. But yes, let's see. David, what does Rookie say?
Rookie says, "The end of Link's Awakening, with all the instruments playing the Song of Awakening as," and spoilers here, "you watch everyone you've met throughout the game slowly fade away. It always gets to me. It affected me when I played as a kid, and still affected me on a replay as an adult. Although I'm not sure why. Zelda games aren't exactly known for their strong NPC characterization."
No, it hit hard. I remember it hitting me hard. Like,
it's you know, most kids' first, you know, existential crisis.
Yeah. And that it's like it's made especially weird when you find out that Mark Frost, the co-creator and the writer for most of Twin Peaks, consulted on Link's Awakening.
That is interesting.
With helping build out the cast of weirdos and stuff. And like this just came out because he was like, "Oh yeah, they asked me to like those people asked me to talk to them about this because Twin Peaks is huge in Japan." So yeah, it's just really weird that he's got his fingerprints on both of those things.
The other thing I think someone, I forget who, was replaying this fairly recently. I don't know, someone on the show, and you know, was commenting on the fact that it kind of shows that it's a mobile game and has, you know, kind of some clunky linearity, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think in some ways that actually, even if it might not be good overall, contributes to this in that, you know, kind of being forced to spend just so much raw time with these characters and, you know, do tons of backtracking and, you know, all those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at least for me, Link's Awakening kind of has a much stronger sort of sense of place compared to most Zelda games.
Oh, absolutely. I think also by virtue of having a smaller world too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That helps it out at the very least. Let's see here. Ben, what does Dave say?
Dave says, "It's hard to grab one when I suddenly have to think of one. So I'll just say the endings before and after credits in Soma left me absolutely shook."
Yeah. I still think it should have been a coin flip. I will go to my grave saying that. Oh man, but it is impactful. Jala, what does Random Sum say?
Random Sum says, "Probably Eris in Final Fantasy VII was a good age for that to hit. I assume it had been spoiled, even though I was playing it on release. I forget how well those things spread on the early internet, and you only need to hear it once. Cloud with the sword forcing your inputs was probably good torture if I knew."
Yeah. No, I mean, again, we're probably about the same age or thereabouts. That fucked me up. Fucked me up real good. Yeah. Let's see. Pickle Factory says, "I have played Nuclear Throne off and on basically since just before official release. And during 2021, it became my super depression game." All capitalized, for a while because it had come out on Switch. "I remember being completely elated when I beat it for the first time after thousands of attempts. Just pure delight, like a ray of sunshine in a year where I felt like garbage a lot of the time."
Yeah.
Hey, sometimes a game comes along and helps you out. Yeah. David, what does Jeremy say?
Jeremy says, "One, when you find your origin story in the Abyss in Hollow Knight, all those broken vessels. And two, after you wake up tied to the table at the beginning of Resident Evil 7, that scene is really something."
Yeah, meeting the family is something big.
Yeah, I feel like that would be a great tagline for the game, just that scene, really something. Yeah,
oh, man.
Yeah, that's... Yeah.
Oh, definitely. Gosh. Let's see. And then I'm looking at something very specific here. And then the final one here, Ben, what does Eli say?
Eli says, the quote, "I don't want to be this kind of animal" from Disco Elysium once made me cry a lot.
Man, I think that a lot. that just comes to mind in all of its different emphases and forms. Like, that is a very versatile phrase that can mean a bunch of different things depending on the situation. It's very, very powerful. Mine is also going to be from Disco Elysium. I'm going to say the scene with the cryptid. Let's keep it nice and vague.
Yeah.
You are a violent and irrepressible miracle. The vacuum of cosmos and stars, burning in it are afraid of you. Given enough time, you would wipe us all out and replace us with nothing just by accident. Yeah. Love it. I don't know. Want to talk about a game that, concerns itself with all kinds of humanity. That sums up a whole bunch, I think. Wiping it out by accident. Let's see. Ben, how about you?
I'm going by the tier meter on this one, and I think it's a tie between Journey and then The Walking Dead, the picture on the prompt.
Yeah.
What specific part of Walking Dead for you?
The last chapter? It's been 10 years. I don't even remember the particular scene. I just remember the emotion, which is weird.
The radiator?
Probably.
For me, it would be the farm in the first Walking Dead Telltale game.
Oh, God, yeah, that's a lot. Did you stop her? Can you remember if you stopped her?
Yes, I did, I believe.
Okay, cool. I've not played the later ones to find out if that's the last time or if that's the only time she's eaten people. David, how about you?
So kind of a weird one. In Sunless Skies, in that world, there are, I guess, intelligent guinea pigs are, one of the species that's running around. And there's a quest chain where there's this group of guinea pigs that were basically kind of like the Expendables type of thing. This group of like special agents that got hired to pull off these crazy jobs. But, they disbanded after, this disastrous mission where one of them got killed and one of them may or may not have betrayed the others, that sort of thing. But their leader left behind a safety deposit box where could only be unlocked with a key that, each of them had a key and you needed all of them to unlock the box.
Mm-hmm.
So you're basically going around, recruiting these characters, to your crew. And it's this long extended process of, some characters, betray other characters. Some characters, it's too painful to come back. Others might, think that the person, the leader that, set up the lockbox betrayed them. Just this whole thing. And you finally get to the end and unlock the lockboxes. And for all that's in them is for each character, basically something that takes care of, or what it was intended to take care of, what the major problem they were dealing with was. So like, one of the characters is in love with, one of the other characters, but never proposed to her because he couldn't afford a wedding ring, and there's a wedding ring. Another character, I want to say another character, had a extreme stutter, and there's basically a voucher for voice lessons. Yeah. Just all sorts of things, but it's all colored by the fact that, like, for the couple, I think at least one of the two of the couple didn't survive my playthrough. I don't remember the details, but like maybe, the character with the stutter, it was like that ultimately their bitterness of, how they were treated or how they perceived themselves to be treated, it led them to actually, betray everyone else. Like,
all of the characters, like some of them it worked out for, but a lot of them just kind of almost a gift to the Magi type of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Just all this possibility. You know, not just cut short. Yeah.
Right. And all for a team of special agent guinea pigs.
I almost forgot that part.
Yep.
Yeah. Angela, how about you?
I have a lot of answers, but I'll make them real short. So Lunar 2, when I was playing the original version of that on Sega CD, and I got to the end and I beat Zophar, and then like the ending that you get is not really like, it's not the happy ending. It's just like unresolved, right? And so I was so depressed after that. I watched the whole thing. Mm. I watched all the credits, and then it just went to the title screen. And I was so depressed. I turned it off. I was depressed for a whole week. And then I go back and I turn it back on. And then there's epilogue as an option in the main menu suddenly. Because I was going to go back and try to rebeat it. Like maybe I'm missing something. And sure enough, I was. There was an epilogue and they faked me out. And it was terrible. I was depressed for a while because of that.
Yeah.
But then I got my happy ending at the end after all of that. But anyway, so that would be one. Another one would be when I was playing Chrono Trigger, and I got to the point in the future where you are trying to get food for the people in the future, and then you go and you find out not only is the guy who tried to go down there to get the food dead, but then there's nothing to eat anywhere.
Yeah, it's all rotten.
It's all rotten and everything, and like their one hope is like gone.
Yep, that's where I checked out of that game.
Yeah, so... So that was depressing. And even when you get seeds later on and they have like a meager hope, it's like, that's still depressing. It didn't make it any better. Like, you know, you have to get the right ending to have like a decent future for them. So anyway, so that would be that one. Also, I would say, of course, Farm in Walking Dead, the first Telltale Walking Dead. And then Steins Gate, when Okabe Rintaro is contemplating doing terrible things because he's stuck in a time loop, and then he feels it doesn't matter anymore. And like, just like that level of desperation and just like not caring and just, you know, whatever, even though the reason he's in that time loop is to try to fix things because he cares. So
the Suzuha loop and that ending still, that one goes down sideways. It's very effective.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So lots and lots of answers.
No, it's good. And I'm happy we got through that without like directly spoiling a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
Treat that like a shopping list, everybody. Remember how last week I couldn't think of an answer for what feature I would like to see taken out of games?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Or I had thought of an answer but forgotten it.
Yes.
Here's what it is. Squeezing through. Like
go on.
Every game since like Uncharted would disguise loading times by having you squeeze through a narrow passage. Yeah. Eventually they stopped needing to do that, but it became such a hallmark for like 4 years of like, this is a next gen game, you know, like, oh, if they're squeezing through something, that means this is good. That's that games still will do it to you. I thought about it because when I was talking about, Night Stop, that horror game that I was talking about earlier, mm-hmm. that has some squeezing through sections used for horror effect. But I was like, there's no loading time for this. Why are they doing this? What are you doing?
And see, I thought you were going for just, like the Tomb Raider reboot where it was just like, how uncomfortable and claustrophobic can we make the player?
Right. No, this is more, I don't know. Yeah. It's more generalized, sense. Less specific. Yeah. So there we go. I just wanted to get that on the record. I told you I'd eventually think of it.
Does that extend to like lifting doors with people and only one person can hold it at a time sort of thing?
Yeah, there's that kind of stuff. Yeah, just basically a lot of the things you see in fucking The Last of Us. I don't know. Cool. Well, thank you so much, everybody, for writing in. We had a ton of responses this time. We love to see it. If you would like to participate in the future, go to the Duckfeed community group on Facebook and watch the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. Thank you very much, Jala, for posting this.
Yeah. The
end boss. Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of games around us. Jala, how are esports doing?
Not real well. So, kind of piggybacking on the, hey, Street Fighter VI has commentary. This sounds kind of like esports. Let's talk about esports. Yeah. So the popularity is starting to slow down and several teams are being sold. So teams are no longer turning out a profit and viewing is down by 13% from last year. So partnerships to broadcast on YouTube and Twitch have started to dissipate and advertisers are cutting their budgets because of all the overall inflation stuff. Teams are laying off top dollar players and or executive staff. Some people are being delisted from just like stock sites like NASDAQ because their share price has dropped down below a dollar. So there's like a whole bunch of cuts going on for esports in general. And TSM, one of the most valuable esports organizations, said that they're selling their slot in the League Championship Series, which is a blow akin to a marquee franchise leaving the NBA or NFL.
Yeah.
So Riot Games, who made League of Legends and built up esports around it, is owned by Tencent, which is the big Chinese company. So yeah. Even though the league around the title has long since been losing money, it still helps Riot drive interest in the game. But this puts Riot at odds with the owners of esports teams who paid at least $10 million for a slot in the league, and they were promised that they'd eventually turn a profit. And so... Riot's president of esports said, "What we're selling is the dream, the long-term future of esports." Except that's not really panning out, especially in the current economic situation.
If investors are angry at you, the last thing you want to say is, "We are selling the dream."
Yeah. So that's what they got going on right there. So
it's a little business management tip.
Yeah.
I mean, it in a sense, it always kind of seemed a little bit like a bubble.
Yeah.
You know, and like the feeling that I got, you know, I was never really going to be interested in it. But the question that I had was like, all right, so football's the game and there are like different rules based on, you know, if it's NFC or AFC. Same thing with, you know, the Major League Baseball. You know, the different divisions have slightly different, different rules and things like that. But it's still fundamentally the same game. How do you build a league around, say, Overwatch, when a company like Blizzard can fuck up Overwatch 2 so badly that it causes the entire community for that to dry up? Right. Like, how do you say like, oh, we are the blank league? There's no like representative. It's just like there's weight. It's too fragmented, I think.
You just keep playing the same game over and over again. That's why Smash Brothers still works for Melee.
Yeah. I also feel like, I don't know, maybe there's the, you know, I've heard the argument that, you know, one of the good things about sponsorships in sports is that they tend to, you know, encourage at least semi, pro-social behavior. So, you know, maybe it's time for the, you know, sponsors to start taking, Blizzard to task.
I mean, they might be. I don't know. I don't know how many sponsors pulled out of things related once they started doing bad labor practices. There's got to be a certain amount of like corporate class solidarity between them. But also, yeah, I don't know. It's just it's a big unanswered question. And this is not surprising, but it sucks for anybody who, you know, thought they were going to make a living off of this or even like paid money to go to a program to like learn how to do it. You know, like thought that, yeah. It sucks that pool's drying up if people are counting on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bummer. I'm going to go to my story, which is less of a bummer. This is the new Amnesia game. Amnesia the Bunker was originally going to be coming out here this week, I think. It was supposed to be out today, but it has been delayed to June 6th. This is partly to remind folks that a new Amnesia game is coming out. That's pretty cool. But also to give a developer a pat on the back, Frictional basically saying, yeah, there were some really bad bugs They were like super corner cases, like multiple rare crashes that are very difficult to identify and reproduce and thereby also fix. But they are holding it back to like make sure that they don't release it in a state where they know that it's broken, just kind of trying to count on people not finding those particular things, you know,
yeah.
And making it a problem. This is good behavior and it should be applauded.
Yeah.
You know, then saying everything's coming together so nicely. We have the gameplay, the art, the animations, everything is coming together and we are really ready to ship this out to the world. So good on them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let's see. David, what's happening in Japan?
Yeah, a guy in Japan was arrested for uploading a Let's Play of one of the Steins Gate games. Yeah, so it was argued apparently that since Steins Gate is a visual novel that a Let's Play is equivalent to piracy, I guess.
Huh. Yeah.
That's basically, you know, basically all there is to that. Just like,
yeah.
Like, was he uploading videos of like the different choices where it's like you could click on the YouTube video and then it would take you to a video of the choice that you made or something like that? Because I could see that being closer to piracy.
Yeah, I have no idea. Honestly, I don't know that I've ever actually played like a visual novel. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. Does it have to be Japanese to be considered a visual novel?
No.
Is it? It's not one of those things.
Can't tell if that's a troll question or not.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I've heard people argue that like in order to be anime, it has to be Japanese, like things like that.
It has to come from the visual novel region of France.
Yeah. So like I don't know, like would like Life is Strange be a visual novel, because that didn't really have gameplay.
Cinematic adventure game,
which I'm not trying to troll. I'm not trying to say they aren't different. I'm trying to say like I don't have enough background to know what the difference is.
It's troublesome precedent because this is effectively akin to saying uploading any part of a game without, I mean, I have to imagine since this was a Let's Play, there was some kind of commentary that is, you know, they're going to be testing whether or not that is considered piracy. Because like, I don't know, I don't see a lot of difference between uploading, you know, a playthrough of Steins Gate and what I did with, you know, Night Stop, right? Where I kind of played this linear experience where like I was moving around and stuff, but there's really only one way to see it. Or like even like YouTube, where it's like every ending of blank, you know, where it's uploading stuff without commentary, but it's still representing the ends of these games. This seems bad to me. And it would be really depressing if that was something that the developer or publisher of Steins Gate decided to do.
Mm-hmm.
Don't arrest people over games if you can help it.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yep.
Ben, you got a story?
Yeah, I got one. It's a very short and innocuous story. They're making a neighborhood in Las Vegas. All the streets are Pokemon names.
Yay!
Thumbs up. I had particular interest in this since I used to live in that city. So I was curious of where the neighborhood was. It's on the east side. It's not far from like the brewery district, like slash auto dealer district or whatever. That's in the southeast part of the city. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is more just, I thought it was funny because this is like how they're appealing to people of our generation now, where it's like Pokemon, you guys like that, right? We're going to slap that on the street signs, buy a house now.
Mm-hmm. No. I live on number one Mewtwo Street, not number two Mew-1 Street. I'm getting that asshole's mail all the time.
There's some potential with this, right? If you have subsequent streets be like Squirtle or, well, yeah, Blastoise, like two ahead of that, you know.
Yeah. God, those assholes over on Blastoise thinking they're better than us. Hey, why not? There's, you know, I'm sick and tired of streets named after trees.
So I feel like this could actually help with usability if they structured it like, you know, all of the fire type streets together, all of the water type, you know, that sort of thing.
There's no water type in in Las Vegas.
It's all fire type. Yeah. Fire and dirt.
Yeah.
Rock type.
A lot of sand shrew.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, that's cute. Well, that sounds like a show to me. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
I feel buttons.
The credit. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in, for listening to level number 459. We appreciate it. A little programming note, just giving you a heads up about an episode coming up that we're going to be missing a week. The episode that will be coming out on June the 16th. I'm going to be out of town for that recording. So just a heads up to not expect that. Sometimes we can't announce ahead of time. That one I can. So, you know, don't be surprised. But you know what you can do to support the show, support the network, patreon.com/duckfeedtv. Subscribe, leave a rating or review. You've listened to podcasts before. We appreciate it all. Jala, what's going on in your world?
Yeah, so over at JalaChan.place, the newest episode that will be up the same day that this episode releases will be on pursuing your passions. It's a fun conversation with a blacksmith that I know and a metal worker. So it'll be a lot of fun to listen to for that. And the one before that was the interview with Rupert Booth, who played Jex in Contradiction. So
nice.
Yeah.
I hope that you asked the blacksmith about burn amelioration. Just how, what do you do about all the burns you get? I would burn myself a lot, is what I'm saying.
My dad was like a career iron worker, so like that he never really got burns. He had other things happen to him a lot, but not burns. So
no burns. Okay. Cool. Well, I've been Cole Ross. You can watch my streams on Twitch at DuckFeedTV.
I've been David Moysmith.
I'm Jalachan, and all the places you may find me, including Jalachan.place.
And I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles.
Wrote down a couple this week since I didn't have any last time.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead and read them off.
Horses are a plot to kill us.
All right.
I mean, that's just a fact.
Yeah. So Jala disconnected at the last minute. There was an internet problem. So I'll read her other one. Baby's first existential crisis. I have won the visual novel region of France. Ben, what you got?
I did the thing where I created a title that I thought of in my head, and we'll see if it works. But I put Lemony Snicket's A Series of Upstairs Apartments.
A series? Okay. And David, what you got?
I had drumming is really fun. And of course, I had still fuck.
Oh, Jala's back. I think she's back. Oh, this is a disaster. Oh, hi, hey, Jala.
Welcome.
Jala, can you hear us? I didn't kick you.
I heard the hum.
I did hear her hum. And she's gone. All right. So we're just going to cut this out. I think by laughs, it was horses are a plot to kill us.
Yes.
Let's any problems going with that?
I'm good with it.
Ben?
I mean, outside of the connection problems, there's no problems. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And then it is. Here she comes again. Oh, boy. I feel so awkward about this because, like, I don't want Jala to not be consulted on this, and I also don't want her to think, like, oh, they cut off the episode because I was inconvenient, or like I wasn't worth waiting around. I'm so insecure about this. Oh my god.
Just be an asshole sometimes, Cole. Come on.
She's gone. So it is decided.